The Dialogue of St. Catherine of Siena, Part 4. A Treatise of Discretion. How the affection should not place reliance chiefly on penance, but rather on virtues, and how discretion receives life from humility, and renders to each man his due. These are the holy and sweet works which I seek from my servants. These are the proved intrinsic virtues of the soul, as I have told you. They not only consist of those virtues which are done by means of the body, that is, with an exterior act, or with diverse and varied penances, which are the instruments of virtue. Works of penance performed alone without the above-mentioned virtues would please me little. Often, indeed, if the soul perform not her penance with discretion, that is to say, if her affection be placed principally in the penance she has undertaken, her perfection will be impeded. She should rather place reliance on the affection of love, with a holy hatred of herself, accompanied by true humility and perfect patience, together with the other intrinsic virtues of the soul, with hunger and desire for my honor and the salvation of souls. For these virtues demonstrate that the will is dead, and constantly slays its own sensuality through the affection of love and virtue. With this discretion, then, should the soul perform her penance. That is, she should place her principal affection in virtue rather than in penance. Penance should be but the means to increase virtue according to the needs of the individual, and according to what the soul sees she can do in the measure of her own possibility. Otherwise, if the soul place her foundation on penance, she will contaminate her own perfection, because her penance will not be done in the light of knowledge of herself and of my goodness with discretion. And she will not seize hold of my truth, neither loving that which I love, nor hating that which I hate. This virtue of discretion is no other than a true knowledge which the soul should have of herself and of me. And in this knowledge is virtue rooted. Discretion is the only child of self-knowledge, and wedding with charity has indeed many other descendants, as a tree which has many branches. But that which gives life to the tree, to its branches, and its root, is the ground of humility, in which it is planted. Which humility is the foster mother and nurse of charity, by whose means this tree remains in the perpetual calm of discretion. Because otherwise the tree would not produce the virtue of discretion, or any fruit of life, if it were not planted in the virtue of humility, because humility proceeds from self-knowledge. And I have already said to you that the root of discretion is a real knowledge of self and of my goodness, by which the soul immediately, and discreetly, renders to each one his due. Chiefly to me, in rendering praise and glory to my name, and in referring to me the graces and gifts which she sees and knows she has received from me, and rendering to herself that which she sees herself to have merited, knowing that she does not even exist of herself, and attributing to me, and not to herself, her being, which she knows she has received by grace from me, and every other grace which she has received besides. And she seems to herself to be ungrateful for so many benefits, and negligent in that she has not made the most of her time and the graces she has received, and so seems to herself worthy of suffering, wherefore she becomes odious and displeasing to herself through her guilt. And this founds the virtue of discretion on knowledge of self, that is, on true humility. For were this humility not in the soul would be indiscreet, indiscretion being founded on pride, as discretion is on humility. An indiscreet soul robs me of the honor due to me, and attributes it to herself through vainglory, and that which is really her own she imputes to me, grieving and murmuring concerning my mysteries with which I work in her soul and in those of my other creatures. Wherefore everything in me and in her neighbor is cause of scandal to her. Contrariwise, those who possess the virtue of discretion. For when they have rendered what is due to me and to themselves, they proceed to render to their neighbor their principal debt of love, and of humble and continuous prayer, which all should pay to each other. And further, the debt of doctrine, an example of a holy and honorable life, counseling and helping others according to their needs for salvation, as I said to you above. Whatever rank a man be in, whether that of a noble, a prelate, or a servant, if he have this virtue, everything that he does to his neighbor is done discreetly and lovingly, because these virtues are bound and mingled together, and both planted in the ground of humility, which proceeds from self-knowledge. A parable showing how love, humility, and discretion are united, and how the soul should conform herself to this parable. Do you know how these three virtues stand together? It is as if a circle were drawn on the surface of the earth, and a tree, with an offshoot joined to its side, grew in the center of the circle. The tree is nourished in the earth contained in the diameter of the circle, for if the tree were out of the earth, it would die and give no fruit. Now, consider in the same way that the soul is a tree existing by love, and that it can be lived by nothing else than love, and that if this soul have not in very truth the divine love of perfect charity, she cannot produce fruit of life, but only of death. It is necessary, then, that the root of this tree, that is, the affection of the soul, should grow in and issue from the circle of true self-knowledge which is contained in me, who have neither beginning nor end, like the circumference of the circle. For turn as you will within a circle, inasmuch as the circumference has neither end nor beginning, you always remain within it. This knowledge of yourself and of me is found in the earth of true humility, which is as wide as the diameter of the circle, that is, as the knowledge of self and of me. For otherwise, the circle would not be without end and beginning, but would have its beginning in knowledge of self, and its end in confusion, if this knowledge were not contained in me. Then the tree of love feeds itself on humility, bringing forth from its side the offshoot of true discretion, in the way that I have already told you, from the heart of the tree, that is, the affection of love which is in the soul, and the patience, which proves that I am in the soul, and the soul in me. This tree, then, so sweetly planted, produces fragrant blossoms of virtue, with many scents of great variety, inasmuch as the soul renders fruit of grace and of utility to her neighbor, according to the zeal of those who come to receive fruit from my servants. And to me she renders the sweet odor of glory and praise to my name, and so fulfills the object of her creation. In this way, therefore, she reaches the term of her being, that is, myself, her God, who am eternal life. And these fruits cannot be taken from her without her will, inasmuch as they are all flavored with discretion, because they are all united, as has been said above. How penance and other corporal exercises are to be taken as instruments for arriving at virtue, and not as the principal affection of the soul, and of the light of discretion in various other modes and operations. These are the fruits and the works which I seek from the soul, the proving, namely, of virtue in the time of need. And yet, some time ago, if you remember, when you were desirous of doing great penance for my sake, asking, "What can I do to endure suffering for you, O Lord?" I replied to you, speaking in your mind, "I take delight in few words and many works. I wish to show you that he who merely calls on me with the sound of words, saying, 'Lord, Lord, I would do something for you,' and he who desires for my sake to mortify his body with many penances, and not his own will, did not give me much pleasure. but that I desired the manifold works of manly endurance with patience, together with the other virtues which I have mentioned to you above, intrinsic to the soul, all of which must be in activity in order to obtain fruits worthy of grace. All other works, founded on any other principle than this, I judge to be a mere calling with words, because they are finite works, and I, who am infinite, seek infinite works, that is, an infinite perfection of love. I wish, therefore, that the works of penance and of other corporal exercises should be observed merely as means, and not as the fundamental affection of the soul. For if the principal affection of the soul were placed in penance, I should receive a finite thing like a word, which, when it is issued from the mouth, is no more, unless it have issued with affection of the soul, which conceives and brings forth virtue and truth. That is, unless the finite operation, which I have called a word, should be joined with the affection of love, in which case it would be grateful and pleasant to me. And this is because such a work would not be alone, but accompanied by true discretion, using corporal works as means, and not as the principal foundation. For it would not be becoming that the principal foundation should be placed in penance only, or in any exterior corporal act, such works being finite, since they are done in finite time, and also because it is often profitable that the creature omit them, and even that she be made to do so. Wherefore, when the soul omits them through necessity, being unable through various circumstances to complete an action which she has begun, or, as may frequently happen, through obedience at the order of her director, it is well, since if she continued then to do them, she not only would receive no merit, but would offend me. Thus you see that they are merely finite. She ought, therefore, to adopt them as a means, and not as an end. For if she takes them as an end, she will be obliged, some time or other, to leave them, and will then remain empty. This, my trumpeter, the glorious Paul, taught you when he said in his epistle that you should mortify the body and destroy self-will, knowing, that is to say, how to keep the rein on the body, macerating the flesh whenever it should wish to combat the spirit. But the will should be dead and annihilated in everything, and subject to my will. And this slaying of the will is that due, which, as I told you, the virtue of discretion renders to the soul, that is to say, hatred and disgust of her own offenses and sensuality, which is acquired by self-knowledge. This is the knife which slays and cuts off all self-love founded in self-will. These, then, are they who give me not only words, but manifold works, and in these I take delight. And then I said that I desired few words and many actions. By the use of the word many, I assign no particular number to you, because the affection of the soul, founded in love, which gives life to all the virtues and good works, should increase infinitely. And yet I do not by this exclude words. I merely said that I wished few of them, showing you that every actual operation, as such, was finite, and therefore I called them of little account. But they please me when they are performed as the instruments of virtue, and not as a principal end in themselves. However, no one should judge that he has greater perfection because he performs great penances, and gives himself in excess to the slaying of his body, than he who does less, inasmuch as neither virtue nor merit consists therein. For otherwise he would be in an evil case who from some legitimate reason was unable to do actual penance. Merit consists in the virtue of love alone, flavored with the light of true discretion, without which the soul is worth nothing. And this love should be directed to me, endlessly, boundlessly, since I am the supreme and eternal truth. The soul can therefore place neither laws nor limits on her love for me, but her love for her neighbor, on the contrary, is ordered in certain conditions. The light of discretion, which proceeds from love, as I have told you, gives to the neighbor a conditioned love, one that, being ordered aright, does not cause the injury of sin to self in order to be useful to others. For if one single sin were committed to save the whole world from hell, or to obtain one great virtue, the motive would not be a rightly ordered or discreet love, but rather indiscreet. For it is not lawful to perform even one act of great virtue and profit to others by means of the guilt of sin. Holy discretion ordains that the soul should direct all her powers to my service with a manly zeal, and that she should love her neighbor with such devotion that she would lay down 1,000 times, if it were possible, the life of her body for the salvation of souls, enduring pains and torments, so that her neighbor may have the life of grace, and giving her temporal substance for the profit and relief of his body. This is the supreme office of discretion, which proceeds from charity. So you see how discreetly every soul, who wishes for grace, should pay her debts, that is, should love me with an infinite love and without measure, but her neighbor with measure, with a restricted love, as I have said, not doing herself the injury of sin in order to be useful to others. This is St. Paul's counsel to you when he says that charity ought to be concerned first with self, otherwise it will never be of perfect utility to others. Because when perfection is not in the soul, everything which the soul does for itself and for others is imperfect. It would not, therefore, be just that creatures who are finite and created by me should be saved through offense done to me, who am the infinite good. The more serious the fault is in such a case, the less fruit will the action produce. Therefore, in no way should you ever incur the guilt of sin. And this true love knows well, because she carries with herself the light of holy discretion, that light which dissipates all darkness, takes away ignorance, and is the condiment of every instrument of virtue. Holy discretion is a prudence which cannot be cheated, a fortitude which cannot be beaten, a perseverance from end to end, stretching from heaven to earth, that is, from knowledge of me to knowledge of self, and from love of me to love of others. And the soul escapes dangers by her true humility, and by her prudence flies all the nets of the world and its creatures, and with unarmed hands, that is, through much endurance, discomfits the devil and the flesh with this sweet and glorious light. Knowing by it her own fragility, she renders to her weakness its due of hatred. Wherefore she has trampled on the world, and placed it under the feet of her affection, despising it, and holding it vile, and thus becoming lord of it, holding it as folly. And the men of the world cannot take her virtues from such a soul, but all their persecutions increase her virtues and prove them, which virtues have been at first conceived by the virtue of love, as have been said, and then are proved on her neighbor, and bring forth their fruit on him. Thus have I shown you that if virtue were not visible and it did not shine in the time of trial, it would not have been truly conceived. For I have already told you that virtue cannot exist and give birth except by means of the neighbor, even as a woman who has conceived a child, if she do not bring it forth so that it may appear before the eyes of men, deprives her husband of his fame of paternity. It is the same with me, who am the spouse of the soul. If she do not produce the child of virtue, in the love of her neighbor, showing her child to him who is in need, both in general and in particular, as I have said to you before. So I declare now that in truth she has not conceived virtue at all. And this is also true of the vices, all of which are committed by means of the neighbor.